Brisbane property values remained resilient last year, while other markets suffered from the economic impacts of COVID-19. And now, almost all property analysts are suggesting that Brisbane's housing markets are going to perform very strongly in 2021. Currently, the Sunshine State's shining, and strong demand for detached houses and outstanding demand for lifestyle areas are projected to deliver somewhere between 6 and up to 10% capital growth in 2021. It depends upon whose forecasts you read. Now, of course, we've heard these predictions of strong price growth in Brisbane at the beginning of every year for, almost the last decade, haven't we? So why is this time different when it hasn't eventuated before? Well, that's what I'm going to ask Brett Warren, National Director of Metropole Property Strategists, who's based in Brisbane, and he's going to explain what's going on the ground and why this time it's different. But if you dig deeper into the statistics of property growth over the last few years, in Brisbane, some properties have far outperformed others, and in particular freestanding houses within 5 to 7k of the CBD or in good school catchment zones have grown in value very strongly. Brisbane's really been a two-tiered market. I know many of the properties purchased for our clients at Metropole from Metropole's Brisbane office have showed double-digit growth over the last 12 months alone. So the higher-end parts of Brisbane, different to other states, the higher-end parts of the property market have actually performed very strongly. Now, while Melbourne and Sydney are regarded as Australia's two world-class cities, today we're going to explain why many people are classing Brisbane as a new world city. And we're going to explain what that means and why those investors who take advantage of the changing trends in Brisbane are going to benefit significantly over the next couple of years. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
Through all the challenges of last year, Brisbane's property values remained resilient, especially given the economic impact COVID had on the hospitality industry and some of our exports. People were a bit concerned that the Brisbane property market was going to suffer. But the Sunshine State's shining, and there's strong demand for houses from investors and owner-occupiers. And once again, at the beginning of another year, people are saying it's Brisbane's turn in the sun. Well, is it right? Is it true? That's what I'm going to have a chat with today with Brett Warren, my business partner and director of Metropole in Brisbane. Welcome, Brett.
Thank you, Michael. We may have heard that a few times before, haven't we?
Yes, we have. And you're a Brisbane local, but I've been travelling to Brisbane for over 50 years and I've seen it grow. I've seen it change from a small country town to what's now a world-class city. And you and I've been working together for a number of almost a couple of decades now. We've had an office in Brisbane for a number of decades. And in that time, I've seen the city morph into a new world city. Australia is very different to other countries with regard to the way we live. There's 25 million people in Australia, and 50% of those live in Sydney, Melbourne, or Brisbane. 2 million of them live in urban areas rather than regional areas. And half of the population live in our three big capital cities. And my philosophy has always been not to fight the big trends, to invest in areas where there's going to be significant economic growth, which leads to wages growth and population growth, and obviously house price growth. In other words, invest in the big capital cities of Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane. And while the overall Brisbane market's underperformed, especially the two big capital cities over the last decade, there are different segments in each market, and different segments of the Brisbane market have performed very strongly. And I want to dig into that a bit deeper as we have a chat. Brett, over the years, you and I have seen how Brisbane has changed. Australia's got two big global cities, Melbourne and Sydney. They're recognised around the world, the Sydney Opera House in Sydney, Melbourne for its sport and art. But I believe Brisbane's what we call a new world city. Now, a new world city is part of an evolving group of cities that are redefining what it means to be global. And according to the demographic experts, there are 50 of these emerging new world cities around the world. They're a group of cities that compete with each other on the basis of very high quality of life, incredible natural assets, character combined with the ability to maybe specialize in one or two things so that they're globally competitive. Now, we're going to talk about Brisbane, but the comparisons elsewhere in the world are Barcelona, which I've been to, Auckland, Copenhagen, which is a city I love, Cape Town, Singapore, Tel Aviv, Vienna, Warsaw. There are these what some would have in the old days called second-tier cities, but are now emerging and finding their place. Typically, they're mid-sized, they've got strong technology credentials, they're highly livable, they've got good infrastructure, and they're often supported by some specialization globally. Now, sure, there's going to be investment opportunities elsewhere around Australia, but since your money's going to run out before opportunities will, my suggestion is to either invest in the two global cities in Australia, Melbourne and Sydney, or the new world city like Brisbane. And I think everybody this time around, Brett, believes it's Brisbane's turn in the sun.
Yeah, look, I think so too. And I think there's a number of things that are starting to, I guess, play out and eventuate. And you know, look, Brisbane's certainly punches above its weight, Michael. It's ranked as the 172nd biggest city in the world, but it's actually in the 80th most connected globally, which is really important. It's in the top 30% of the world's fastest growing cities. It's got world-class foreign investment. It's got a competitive labour market, highly appealing development and lifestyle model. And it's an international student city, which is important and will continue to grow. And a new world city must have a globally orientated business cluster. And I think there's a number of changes that are happening in Brisbane. It's got higher education. It's got a strong digital economy. Commodities and professional services are starting to grow stronger. And obviously, we've got the travel and tourism and conventions and things like that as well. But Brisbane's now creating more infrastructure. It's building its economy. And we'll talk more about it later, Michael. But a lot of it will have to do with the Asian century in the next next decade, I guess, and the fact that there's a number of Chinese and Taiwanese airlines that have actually signed up to fly in Brisbane direct for the first time ever. So that's going to play a huge role in shaping this new world city as well.
So, Brett, we're not talking about Queensland, are we? But Brisbane's property market is different to other states. Let's be clear, we're talking about Brisbane, but to many outsiders, they see Brisbane as stretching from the Sunshine Coast in the north to the New South Wales border in the south, 200 kilometres long. In a sense, they're right because people are commuting. Those two cities are interconnected. Workers are commuting from these locations. But that, I think that's probably one of the reasons why the Brisbane property market or values in Brisbane haven't grown as strongly because there are these neighbouring large centres. But what we're talking about and where we have specialised for our clients and you're investing is really in Brisbane itself, not Southeast Queensland.
That's a really important point and distinguishment you've made, Michael, because, look, there's Queensland, there's Southeast Queensland, but then there's Brisbane. So, you know, we're specifically looking in that 7 to 10 kilometre ring from the Brisbane CBD where there's landlocked, there's no more parcels of land or estate parcels of land. There's huge demand in those locations. And in these other areas, Brisbane doesn't have the urban sprawl of a city of Melbourne. You might be able to buy 15 or 20 Ks out from Sydney and Melbourne and actually do okay, and you would have seen that growth. But Brisbane hasn't had that, and it's been the inner to middle ring areas that have really benefited from those types of pockets, because at the end of the day, 48% of all Queenslanders live in Brisbane, and it's generating just over 50% of Queensland jobs.
Well, I think that's a really important point to understand how the locals live, how they want to live, and how they're going to want to live in the future. But some people are going to say, oh, those guys have got a vested interest as a national director of the company, even though you live in Brisbane, and even though I love Brisbane as a city, it makes no difference to us where we invest or where our clients invest. But people have been waiting a long time to see Brisbane's capital growth. And every year somebody's come up with a concept that it's finally Brisbane's turn to shine in the sun. So some people are thinking, oh, they're just saying it again. What would you say to them, Brett?
Yeah, look, it certainly sounded like a broken record at some stages. But as we spoke about before, Michael, just because Queensland or southeast Queensland overall haven't had a lot of growth. There's still pockets of Brisbane that have actually done quite well. You know, they've had a real strong capital growth over the last 5 to 7 years. The rest of Brisbane has struggled. We had the GFC and the floods. We had a mining downturn, so a lot of those out of pockets have really, really struggled. But the inner city locations where there's still, you know, really good, more affluent jobs available, there's a really low supply of land and things like that have performed very, very strongly and probably even performed some better than outer areas in Sydney and Melbourne. You know, there's a number of commentators that are looking for Logan and Ipswich because it's time factor out there. But in reality, it's a top-down type of approach in Brisbane. And the middle to inner ring suburbs, you know, the Ascots, the Tenerifes, the Bulimbas, and then getting out towards, you know, Windsor, Wilston, and then Holland Park and Camp Hill in particular on the south side have done increasingly well because they've had all those attributes we were talking about.
I think the other thing is just the demographics in those areas. So in those areas, and especially now as we're moving into a new property cycle, as we're moving into a new economic cycle, we know that COVID hit Australians differently, not just health-wise, where some age group, some demographics suffered more than others. Similarly, some demographics suffered more financially, economically than others. And the more affluent people, the higher net worth people have actually come out of COVID pretty well. Now, this is not a judge of people, but it's a fact that there are more affluent people who are able to and prepared to pay for properties in good locations. But up till now, there was a bit of a brain drain where in Brisbane, skilled people, educated young people, they finished university and then they moved to Sydney or they moved to Melbourne or they went overseas where they had more highly paid jobs. But gee, I've noticed a change. It's no longer the case. A lot of millennials are now keen to stay in Brisbane. They're seeing it as a good place to live. Look, when I first went to Brisbane, we used to joke about it being a big country town. And that was even before we opened our office there close to 20 years ago, a holiday on the Gold Coast for 40, 50 years and drive up to Brisbane. But gee, it's changed. The nature of it has changed. The lifestyle has changed. And so there's a big shift of people no longer wanting to leave Brisbane. They don't need to, but they've got everything they need there. And clearly they are going to want to stay there. I think with all the challenges we had last year in 2020, they're going to recognise that Queensland's actually got quite a few good attributes, hasn't it?
That's a really good point, Michael. I think it's you can almost liken it to a country town or a regional town. You know, a lot of our country folk, you know, their kids kind of have to leave the farm or leave the regional town to look for opportunities. And with Brisbane being a country, big country town, that was no exception as well. But now the fact it's really creating those kinds of jobs, I think it really has been lacking in the last 5 to 10 years, those higher-end professional kind of jobs that millennials probably tend to move to Sydney or Melbourne to take up. And I think we're starting to see that those kind of opportunities are starting to present themselves. People can stay in Brisbane, stay closer to their family and their friends and the lifestyle that they've come accustomed to and really benefit from that.
Well, it's the millennials that are going to shape their housing markets around Australia and in Brisbane in particular, because millennials are now coming into household formation age, having babies, moving out of apartments, buying homes, and how they want to live in Brisbane in particular is living in houses as opposed to all those high-rise apartments. And demographics have always driven our markets, but the sheer size and the stage of the lifestyle, no generation will shape Australia more in the 2020s than the millennials, and they actually want to stay in Brisbane and they've got the money, so they're going to need those extra bedrooms, but they're also going to want to be in good school catchment areas. I know that's one of the areas that you look at when you look at what drives suburbs, what drives price growth in certain locations. And I think one of the problems with the millennials moving out of some of the apartments they've been living in up to now is that there aren't as many Gen Zs below them. It's a much smaller generation. And a lot of the apartments in the CBD and around the CBD in Fortitude Valley, and they've now riddled the skyline. They're not going to have as many people wanting to live in them. There's going to be a bit of a hole there for a few, well, years, maybe even a decade.
Yeah, certainly. And we saw that with the oversupply there for a while. And that's probably a little bit of a concern at the moment as well with migration and things like that coming to a bit of a halt for the short term. So that is definitely an issue that we're yet to see an answer for.
Well, some people are saying Perth's also going to do well this year, and there's no doubt it will. But boy, it's had a hard time for a long time. But what I like about Brisbane, as opposed to the Perth market, is Brisbane's got multiple pillars sustaining its economy. And that's one of the reasons it got through the last year or so much better than many expected.
Yeah, definitely. Look, a number of pillars of the economy. Clearly, we've been hurt a little bit by tourism, but tourism's quite strong. People are tending to stay home and still travel and things like that as well. Agriculture's becoming more important, especially as we open ourselves up to Asia and, you know, becoming the food bowl of the world. Mining's starting to get reinvigorated a little bit. There's a number of big projects that are happening to our north. And finally, construction's been around for a fair while. And, you know, Brisbane is starting to become a new world city. There's more professional services, but also arts and culture. And I think that's the change when we're getting new culture and tourism coming to the shores. It's really changing the city and, you know, changing it into that new world city we were talking about.
Well, all this is what's going to underpin property value. So we haven't even talked about property. We've talked about demographics. We've talked about the economy. We've talked about jobs growth. But that's what we look for when we look for a place to invest. So are there going to be economic growth areas other than Brisbane? Of course there are. But again, let's not fight these big trends. One of the things I've been always impressed with the Brisbane councils are that you've been doing a lot of infrastructure building before it was necessary. Where I live in Melbourne, it's come as with a long lag. Only when all the freeways are blocked and the railway crossings are holding up traffic and the roads aren't taken anymore. But you've built tunnels, you've built loops, you've also built lots of destinations for people to go to.
That's a really interesting point, and something that I think is a strength of Brisbane is actually having one city council. So it's actually been quite efficient. It's been fairly proactive. You mentioned the tunnels. We're now getting Cross River Rail, and we're getting the Brisbane Metro, and all of those decisions have been made fairly easily and fairly comfortably, rather than the bickering with a number of different councils and consultants and things like that. And I think, for investors moving forward, I also see that as a positive, Michael, to have some certainty and some confidence in the market that, decisions are being made there.
Sure. Well, one of the tenets of our investment philosophy is manufacturing capital growth. And we buy a lot of properties for our clients in Brisbane with development potential where they can build townhouses. And this is the way I'm finding a lot more Brisbane people want to live. They're wanting modern accommodation, not just the Queenslanders. They're wanting a big accommodation, but they're happy to have a compact block to be able to live close to the shops, close to the amenities, close to the schools, close to public transport.
Yeah, it's about low maintenance living. And, people are busy these days. They don't want the big backyards anymore. They want lifestyle, and they're happy to downsize into something more small and manageable, like a small backyard or courtyard or something like that.
And having one council gives a level of certainty, and the way your properties are zoned and the way the sizes of the lots are means that it's actually much more certainty in doing medium density development than in other cities.
Yeah, absolutely. I know there's a number of councils in the Sydney and Melbourne market, and you could be different from north to south, but it's all under the same plan, the same city plan, which is quite exciting. And gives us a great deal of certainty for our clients as well.
Now, one of the things that stands out is the affordability of Brisbane property. And again, we're talking about not cheap property, but good quality properties in good locations. The price gap between our big capital cities and Brisbane is now at an all-time high. On the other hand, sure, wages may be a little bit more in Sydney, a little bit more in Melbourne, but even if wages are a little bit less in Brisbane for these knowledge workers and these more affluent people, the price of buying a property is so much cheaper.
Yeah, and look, that's really important. I know a lot of people talk about the affordability gap, Michael. Surely Brisbane has to catch up. Well, look, in a sense it doesn't, but we're starting to see that in reality now that, can you almost sell your home in Sydney and afford two properties in some parts of Brisbane? So that's going to create opportunity, I believe. I think, people might usually go down to Melbourne and Sydney for an extra 20 or 30 grand or 40 grand, whatever it may be. But when they start to see their house prices double what you can do in Brisbane, people probably have a second thought about, trading up for that, just for that extra $20,000 or $30,000 when they're clearly cost of living and mortgage factors are really important. And look, in the past, to be honest, Michael, I think Brisbane's a great place to live, and the affordability gap's all well and good, but if there's no jobs here, people aren't going to be able to move here. And I think that's the challenge Brisbane have had in the last decade, and it's starting to rectify itself now.
Well, affordability, we're talking about homeowners, and homeowners in general are the ones that create the market. So 70% of properties are bought, owned by homeowners, and that's what we want. And it's the investors that create the booms and busts when they get exuberant during the booms and get a bit down when difficult times occur. So we want a large cohort of owner-occupiers wanting to live in a location and being able to afford to do up the homes, improve, change the neighbourhoods, gentrify. And there's no doubt that Brisbane has gentrified considerably. In other words, some of those older neighbourhoods, people have moved out and more affluent people have moved in. But similarly, as investors, we want a combination of high growth and rental return. And Brisbane offers that combination. So you also got higher rental return. And the tenants who want to live in these more affluent suburbs, they're not living there because they can't afford to buy. It's often for lifestyle reasons. And they're the sort that you can increase the rent over the years because they're not living at paying 30, 40% of their rent, of their income, I should say, as rent as they are in the lower socioeconomic suburbs.
Yeah, certainly. Look, we're starting to see that. Obviously, in the inner city, it's really starting to change, and those more affluent areas are really starting to get a new vibe. And look, the lifestyle is the next thing we're talking about, Michael. Here is really changing. It's being spearheaded in the CBD. We talked about growth and capital growth from Brisbane starting from the inside out, and that's what we're seeing, the change with lifestyle. The Queen's Wharf project, I did a big report on 4 or 5 years ago, and that's starting to come to fruition. You know, we've got a number of five-star hotels being built, 50 cafes and restaurants and bars, and, you know, a world-class casino kicking it off. And there's a number of projects within that inner city where there may have been old, tired factories and warehouses and disused space, and that's getting a breath of fresh air. And, you know, people are really getting excited. There's a real buzz down there. We were down there for a couple of Christmas parties, and there's a real excitement at that level with all the new changes that are happening. And as we talked about, it's really becoming a different kind of city, a new world city.
Well, one of the things we've learned through COVID is the importance of your neighbourhood, the importance of having somewhere to go where there's attractions, where there's lifestyle, where there's community, where you feel part of. And to be blunt, that wasn't the way it was in Brisbane 20 years ago, was it? You couldn't find a place to buy a cafe. There wasn't the alfresco dining. But it has changed. And so lifestyle is part of the reason that the millennials, who are going to shape Brisbane in the next decade, are staying, because it's there. They don't need to find it elsewhere. I think it's also a reason that we're going to attract more tourism, the proximity to Asia. And we're not necessarily talking about China, because we've got to be less dependent upon China moving forward. I hope we can resolve our issues with China. We've got no problem with the Chinese tourists coming, the Chinese investors buying there. But I think we've got to understand that there's more to Asia than China, and we're on their doorstep.
Yes, we're the closest big capital to China, and I think that's really going to help throughout Asia, particularly for investment, for tourism. You know, we've got 6 airlines that have signed up to that runway that have never flown to Brisbane before. So we talked about potentially Brisbane becoming a bit of a playground for China, I guess. We'll certainly start to grab more of the international student pie. And we all know that once international students kind of hang around and get visas, they start to contribute to the community. So, you know, there's some real positives to come out of that relationship with Asia, I see, in the next decade. It's going to be a bit of a game changer, I think.
Now, what about the supply and demand ratio in Brisbane? How's that going?
Yeah, I think that's critical. That's obviously we've talked about a number of factors, but I guess putting some facts and some data behind those factors is good as well. And, you know, we spoke to Dr. Andrew Wilson earlier in the year at our Brisbane seminar, and he suggested that that overall, you know, new household supply balances short by about 80 properties a week. And that's probably a general statement, but I'd probably think that's a lot higher from what we're seeing at ground level now, Michael. We're getting huge numbers through open homes. We're talking 60, 70, 80 groups through open homes. So the really good, select, high-demand property in A-grade locations, there's just not enough supply, and there's huge demand at the moment, particularly from home buyers, and you know, investors aren't even really back in the market as we speak. So that'll start to ramp up next year too, I think.
Sure, but I don't think we want the listeners to this to get us wrong. Not all Brisbane property values are going to rebound strongly moving forward. So while most of the commentators are suggesting that Brisbane is going to be the strongest market in 2021, properties located in the inner ring suburbs, particularly the gentrifying locations, as we said, are going to outperform the cheaper properties in the outer suburbs. Now, the reason is, as we said a moment ago, is COVID has adversely affected the lower income earners to a greater degree than the middle and high income earners. They're likely to recover their incomes quicker. They have. They've got money stashed away. In fact, high-end luxury car sales have been very strong in Brisbane. On the other hand, those high-rise apartment towers in and near the CBD, they were already suffering from adverse publicity and a bit of an oversupply. So I think they're going to have some issues. They're going to be shunned by homeowners, shunned by investors. And I think this time around, like every downturn, there's going to be a flight to quality properties, an increased emphasis on livability. We've said it a few times, but I think it's worth mentioning again that as our priorities change, some buyers are going to pay more. They're going to be willing to pay more. The recollection of the challenges that we've had in 2020 will be there for a while, and they're going to pay more for properties with pandemic appeal, with a little bit more space, a bit of security. They don't just talk about the property itself, but the locations. So proximity to parks, mobility, good public transport, access to jobs. If you've got all those around you, and particularly in 20 minutes, I know you've written a bit about the 20-minute neighbourhoods, all that's going to mean that your value of your property is going to be underpinned by strong ongoing demand from affluent owner-occupiers.
Good point. And I think it's just to clarify that, Michael, I mean, you know, people want choice. So it's not just one park. It's a couple of parks. It's not just one good school for the kids. It's half a dozen to choose from and so on and so forth with shopping centres and coffee shops and restaurants and all those kinds of critical factors. You just don't get that 15 or 20 kilometres from Brisbane. I think that's going to be a real trap moving forward. People believe because Sydney and Melbourne have, you know, done well in those areas that Brisbane will too. And I agree that they will, but you're going to have to wait 30 or 40 years for that to eventuate, Michael. And, you know, most people haven't got the time to wait that long. And I'd suggest there's far better options within that, you know, 8 to 10 kilometre ring.
What concerned me last year during the lockdowns was the fact that people bought properties in Brisbane sight unseen when they couldn't fly in, fly out and have a look. Some investors, I know some buyer's agents from other states did the same. And now we're seeing them fly back in this new year, but they don't have the perspective. So property investment's a combination of science and art. So the science, the data, we can look at that up on the internet, and most property strategists, most buyer's agents can get an understanding of it. But it's the perspective that you can't get unless you've lived there, especially if you come from a different state and don't understand how people live, that's missing from a lot of people giving advice on where and how to buy in Brisbane.
Yeah, good point. And just to give an example, I mean, there's two or three of the top performing suburbs in Brisbane. Maybe a Windsor, Tenerife, New Farm, those particular suburbs, we're probably only buying about 40% of that suburb, Michael, because there's a level of flooding, there's a level of overland flow, there's zoning issues. You know, you don't want to wake up one day and have 100 apartments built behind you and those kinds of issues. So that perspective, you don't know. I mean, we always see the buyer's agents bragging that they've bought something 30 or 40 grand under market value or what it's worth. But the fact is it's in an inferior location and we'd probably already ruled it out. So it is critical, particularly in Brisbane, to have that level of perspective and understand what happens at ground level.
And public transport in Brisbane's a bit different as well. Train lines are very important, aren't they?
They are. Look, bus lines are starting to catch up because they're starting to get their own avenue into the city. They're not, you know, getting stuck in traffic and things like that. But, you know, another really important statistic, I think about 85% of suburbs within, you know, 10 to 12 kilometres of Brisbane have access to a bus or a train. Outside of that 10 or 12K ring, it's about 25%, Michael. So, you know, that's critically important as well. Our roads have been quite good. They're starting to get busier now as the population grows. And I think there's another 500,000 cars coming. So we can learn from what we see in Sydney and Melbourne, and those public transport options are going to become critical.
And I think it's also important to recognise that we keep talking about Brisbane property, but we've sort of avoided saying don't buy apartments. So let's be blunt. Apartments in Brisbane haven't been good investments, and it's something we actually don't buy and haven't bought as buyer's agents, yet I know some people do.
Yeah, look, it's incredibly important, you know, to get that right. I mean, if we are, have done in the past, we've always bought something that has something special about it, like a courtyard, like we spoke about before, where
yes, yeah,
you know, they're going to get through those periods. But look, still, there's still those oversupply issues in some locations. It's helped our economy with construction and things like that, but certainly it's something we're leaving out at this stage.
Right. So this is going to be an interesting year in Australia's economy and our property markets. We've now got so many factors pointing to a great year ahead for 2021. There's going to be easier finance, and that's going to make life a lot different. There's still going to be government support. Consumer confidence is rising. Business confidence is rising. Jobs are being created. We're not suggesting that we're totally out of the woods. The economy is still going to have some challenges. There's still going to be high unemployment, underemployment, low wages growth. But everything's pointing to a great year in property, but not everywhere. And that's the way it's always been. So if you're considering getting involved in residential investment and you're wondering where to look, there's lots of places, lots of options, but why not start where all the trends are suggesting we're going to have high growth, high demand, and interestingly, reasonably high rental returns. Brett, you've had a good holiday. You're back. You're rested. You're happy to see more clients and help them understand about what to do in Brisbane?
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. I mean, look, I'm passionate about property and helping people just as you are. So, you know, I think, as I said, it's a critical market to get right. If you get it right, you can do well. But as we've seen in the last probably 5 to 7 years, if you don't get it right, the results just won't be there, unfortunately, and that's not going to change.
So if you want to secure your financial future, you're going to need much more than a buyer's agent. Buyer's agents are able to fulfill the order put by a property strategist, but they tend to be biased. They've got a vested interest because they only buy where they know. You probably need much more than the property strategist in this challenging year 2021 is going to have. And at Metropole, we offer a holistic approach to ensure you can grow, protect and pass on your wealth. So we offer not just property and wealth advice, but financial planning, renovations, development, property management in Brisbane as well. And we actually started all off by building you a plan, a customized solution to meet your specific needs using our time-tested strategies. And we help beginners. We help them get in their first property. Great time to get into the market. We help experienced investors add to their portfolio and sophisticated investors manufacture capital growth by becoming property developers. So if you want to find out a bit more about what Brett and my team at Metropole can do for you, go to metropole.com.au, leave your details, and we'd love to be part of your wealth creation journey. Brett, look forward to having a lot more chats in 2021 with you.
Absolutely. Going to be a really positive year, I feel, Michael. So good to be with you.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In today's mindset message, I want to share a lesson I learned from one of my early mentors, the late Jim Rohn, who taught me we all have two choices that we face in life. He said each of us has two distinct choices to make about what we're going to do with our lives. The first choice we can make is to be less than we've got the capacity to be, to earn less, to have less, to read less, to think less, to try less, and discipline ourselves less. These are the choices that lead to an empty life, said Jim Rohn. These are the choices that once made lead to a life of constant apprehension instead of a life of wondrous anticipation. And the second choice? Well, the second choice at Jim Rohn is to do it all, to become all that we possibly can be, to read every book we possibly can, to earn as much as we possibly can, to give and share as much as we possibly can, to strive and produce and accomplish as much as we possibly can. Jim Rohn said, all of us have got the choice to do or not to do, to be or not to be, to be all or to be less or to be nothing at all. Jim Rohn said, like the tree, it would be a worthy challenge for us to stretch upwards and outwards to the full measure of our capabilities. Why not do all that we can, every moment we can, the best that we can, for as long as we can? Our ultimate life objective should be to create as much as our talent, our abilities and our desire will allow us to, will permit. To settle for doing less than we can is to fail at the worthiest of undertakings. Jim Rohn said the results are the best measurement of human progress. Not conversation, not explanation, not justification. Results are the measure of how you're progressing. And if our results are less than our potential suggests they should be, then we've got to strive to be more today than we were yesterday. The greatest reward, according to Jim Rohn, is always reserved for those who bring the greatest value to themselves and to the world around them as a result of who and what they've become. So Jim Rohn taught me the pathway of personal development, and that's why in each show I share with you a mindset message to help you understand how you can become a better person, and I hope today I've taught you that you've got two choices. You also face those. You can be as much as you can be or less. Which way are you heading? Well, now you understand why, if you're considering taking advantage of the new property cycle in 2021, Brisbane should be on your radar. Now, it's not for everybody, but gee, it's affordable. It's the right time of the cycle. Everything's pointing in the right direction. But you can't just buy any property in Brisbane. Remember, there's not one Brisbane property market, and we're definitely not talking about Southeast Queensland and the Gold Coast and the Sunshine Coast. As you heard from Brett, we're talking about specific locations in certain suburbs and the right type of properties in those suburbs in maybe 5 to 7K of the CBD of Brisbane. Now, you can't just buy them sight unseen, and you can't get advice from somebody who flies in and out. So as we mentioned, if you're interested in getting involved in the Brisbane property market, why not have a chat with my team at Metropole? Go to metropole.com.au. Metropole's Brisbane office has been helping clients grow, protect and pass on their wealth since 2006. So we've bought more properties for investors in Brisbane than anyone else has over the last couple of decades. Now, if you got some benefit from today's show, I'd like you to help others who'd like to benefit from the new property cycle as well. My aim is to make as many people as financially fluent and give them the opportunity to become financially independent. So tell somebody about the show, use the share button on the podcast app, or tell somebody about it, or tell the world by leaving a review. And if you enjoyed this, and you haven't subscribed yet, why not subscribe to the Michael Yardney podcast on your favorite podcast app? If you want to get even more of me, you can listen to the past episodes. You can listen to them at 1.5 speed. I still sound pretty good that way. By the way, that's the way I listen to podcasts. Or you can follow me on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube. And of course, there's my daily property update newsletter. But if you want to get more exclusive content, why not join the Property Update Facebook group? It's a private Facebook group. Just have a look at it for it on Facebook. I'll be back twice a week. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?